Silverman. Time Smart Talk with Steve-O. You're listening to News Talk WLOB 13, 10 a.m. Joining me in the studio, Deb Davis.
Hey.
And playing backup, we've got Shani McShani. How you doing, Shani McShani?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. We have an exciting show in about 5 minutes. We have two leading experts in green building and environmental sustainable practices here in Maine. We've got Chris Briley and Jeff Marks. You'll be hearing from them in about 5 minutes. But, Deb, what's this about us being preempted in the second hour?
We are being preempted by UMaine Basketball.
So we only, our listeners only have 1 hour of Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O this week. That's it.
That's it.
Man, yeah.
They're going to be in rough shape.
How are the Black Bears doing?
I wish I could tell you.
You
but
don't
I'm
follow
not,
them?
No.
Well, let me see if I can pull this up right here.
Okay.
Oh, it looks like they're 2-21.
Oh.
For a winning percentage of 0.087.
That's not very good.
Well, I think this may be what they call a rebuilding year.
Oh, is that what it is?
It looks like they're 1-9 in the conference. Maybe, you know, right after Tide Smart Talk, it'll a little bit of a shout out.
Yeah.
UMaine Basketball.
Go Black Bears.
Hey, let's cover a little bit on this day before we get to the interview with our green building, energy efficient gurus. In 1964, wow, this is the 51st anniversary of the Beatles arriving in America. What do we got there queued up for Beatles?
Probably the best song ever.
You were at this show, weren't you? No?
Yeah, I was two.
No. They arrived in New York, greeted by 3,000 fans. They nearly caused a riot. And then 2 days later was when their Ed Sullivan show was. So 51 years today. You want to hear something funny? Who's your favorite Beatle?
Paul McCartney.
Really? Everyone?
Yeah.
Shani's nodding, Paul McCartney? Paul McCartney and John Lennon have always have gotten kind of the hype as being the talented Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 10 years... You know, really after his death, George Harrison's been picking up a lot of steam. Because, there was a two-hour special. I don't know if it was on HBO or something on George Harrison. But, Ringo, he's a drummer. Nobody really gives much credit to the... Other than Phil Collins, nobody can credit the drum. You know how Ringo got the job? His name, Ringo Starr?
That's a cool name. You're hired.
But George Harrison was kind of the quiet, introspective. Mm-hmm. He was into Zen and... He was like very cerebral.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the Beatles and after, really interesting songwriter. He's done some great things. I don't think he gets enough credit.
Right, yeah.
So that's what I think. Anyhow,
okay.
51 years. What else do we have? Joe DiMaggio became the first $100,000 a year baseball player in 1949.
Wow.
Back at the day, Ted Williams only made $65,000. I don't know, back in the... 49, that may have gone
a
long way.
That was a lot of money.
That may
have
been a good amount of change. Oh, birthdays today. Garth Brooks. What do you think of Garth?
I like Garth. I know other people are really crazy about him. Like Shani McShani.
Shani McShani loves her Garth.
Yes.
This song here is one of my favorite Garth songs. This is The Dance.
Yes.
And to really appreciate this song, I think you got to look at the video. Because the video adds a lot of mythology and the death of JFK and... Space Shuttle Challenger, and there's a lot of theme, and it's really an interesting song.
Yeah.
He seems a little pompous.
You think so?
I think Garth has gotten, first he retired 10 years ago and says, I'm sorry to my fans, I'm leaving, and then he married Trisha Yearwood, and then he's just come back, and he says, I can't do this to my fans and leave them Garthless, so he's come back.
Garthless?
Oh, he didn't say that.
Boy.
That's all my thing. One other on this day, James Spader, one of my favorite actors. Do you ever watch him?
Yes, Boston Legal, yes.
Boston Legal with Captain Kirk.
Yes.
Was
They were amazing.
Oh, they were amazing. But his new show, which started last year, Blacklist, Red Reddington, it's a classic. You got to watch that.
Oh, yes.
Unbelievable. Anyhow, we should probably get to this interview before we give over the airwaves to UMaine Basketball as they seek out their third win of the season. We don't want to... deny the listening audience of that. So we're going to go into an interview that was recorded yesterday, and I'll be introducing the interview in the piece. So, Deb, why don't we fade into our interview with Chris Briley and Jeff Marks? I hope to have 2 hours of goodness next week, and then in 12:06 after the news break, we will relinquish 50,000 watts of power to UMaine basketball. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. Here's the interview.
It's not easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when you could be something so much nicer, like red, a yellow, aquamarine, or something more colorful like that. It's not easy being green.
I think he's wrong, Deb, don't you? I think it should be easy to be green, don't you?
It should be very easy.
Green's important, and that's the theme of today's show.
Yes.
Welcome to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. You're listening to News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, and we have two very special guests. We have Jeff Marks. Jeff is the Executive Director of the Environmental and Energy Technology Council of Maine, and also Chris Briley, who's co-founder and principal architect at Briburn. Both of these gentlemen are very involved with environmental, energy, building issues. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for playing my theme song.
Do you play that at home a lot?
Yeah.
Is a green architect, is that kind of your personal theme thing?
Yeah, it is. I was expecting Clapton to come screaming in through these earphones, but I guess he doesn't have any songs about being green.
No. Yeah, we like to match the theme music to the subject matter. It really gets, what do we have now, 1.2 million listeners?
Oh, at least.
Okay, sure. When you post podcast as well as what we like to call in the business terrestrial radio,
yes,
which is AM, you're able to guess and add mythology to how many millions of people are listening based on potential.
Wow.
So using that metric, there could be billions of people listening, right?
There could be billions.
Let's go with that. I don't want to put too much pressure on our guests. We got Jeff and we have Chris here. Today's subject is green building, sustainable energy, technology, and I really want to focus a little bit on how that applies here in Maine. We also have a very special event next Tuesday. And that event is a green drinks event, which I want to talk about, and also a tour of the Verdescent House. But before we start, let's spend about a minute with each of you. And, Jeff, I'd like to start with you, talking a little bit about your background and really what kind of brought you both literally and figuratively to Maine and what brought you into an area of work involving environmental and energy technology.
Sure. I was born and raised in Maine in a little town called East Millinocket, Milltown. Left as soon as I was 18, traveled back and forth across the country, have spent a lot of time in various policy and political positions, working on all levels of government as well as a few different companies. Got to Washington, D.C. and started working with specifically on energy and environmental issues with United Technologies, which is a Fortune 50 company. A very strong aerospace side to their business, as well as a commercial building side of their business. So everything from Carrier air conditioners to Otis elevators, and they had a fuel cell business at the time that did everything from buses to cars to the space shuttle.
Cool.
So I've been interested in the subject for a long time and have worked with a variety of different companies on their green and sustainable issues.
Also see that you're an attorney and you get your JD from University of California.
I am a very inactive member of the California Bar at this point. I've never actually practiced.
Fantastic, because I can understand many people wanting to distance themselves from the label of being a lawyer. But that was probably good background, just if you're involved with legislative process and regulatory process, understanding how those things happen. Whether you're practicing or not is probably important, right?
Absolutely. Policy has a big effect and big impact on green energy and environmental type issues, and it's been an exciting field to be in.
And what is e2tech.org, which is the website, but e2tech, talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk to Chris.
Sure. e2tech is I like to consider it a business association plus, and it's plus because we represent companies, really anybody and everybody who does anything in the energy and environmental field in Maine, but we also have quite a few different types of organizations that belong to e2tech. Environmental groups in Maine belong to e2tech. Universities, It's really a diverse organization, and it's an educational group, it's a networking group, it's a connecting group, and it's very diverse, and it's been an interesting organization to work with.
Great. Thank you. Let's go to our other guest and get a little bit of background. Chris Briley is the co-founder and principal architect at Briburn. They specialize in green building. Talk a little bit about your background, how you ended here in Maine, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I'm from Ohio. That's where I grew up. My mom was from Portland, South Portland, so we used to always come up here as kids. So I had this idyllic view of Maine as this summer paradise. And I don't know, I guess I convinced my wife right out of college that that was a good idea to honeymoon. And so I'm still on my honeymoon, Steve.
Wow.
Here. Yeah, aww, been here ever since.
That's so nice.
Oh, I know. I can get a little romantic every once
in a while. Get a little plug in.
Yeah.
I do that too with my wife, but I find she never really listens to the show. So I talk about, you know, that all the time. And then I say, hey, do you want to listen to the show at 11:14 this morning?
Like, what, listen to you talk about stuff?
Get that all the time.
Right, 24/7.
Well, it is Valentine's Day next week, so that's the timing is good.
God, there's so many holidays. I don't even. We're staying on the subject of green, sustainable energy.
Right,
but
right.
There's too many holidays and anniversaries and birthdays and other things. I can't even keep up with it. But that's my rant. So you ended up here in Maine.
I went to school at Ball State College of Architecture and Planning, or Ball State University. And it's so funny out here. I'd say I'm from Ball State, and they're like, Ball State, where is that? In the Midwest, everyone knows.
Some people probably assume it's a state, right? They just didn't hear about it.
Yeah, so it's the Ball brothers.
Montana's a state, South Dakota's a state, and
Ball State.
Ball must be a state, right?
They did. But, it was founded by the Ball brothers, and that's why. So, you know, the masonry jars, you know, the Ball jars.
Are you serious? Is that the history of Ball State?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought there was a better story, but the Ball brothers. Wow.
It's a state university, but, you know, there was so much contributed by the Ball brothers that, you know, because that was huge. You know, everyone had Ball jars. People still do. So, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. But now it's like Dave Letterman's alma mater, and, you know.
So you ended up here. Talk a little bit about Briburn and how that was founded and kind of the work that you do with Green Design Studio and that type
of
thing.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've been an architect for quite a while now, and then I went out on my own about 7 years ago, founded the Green Design Studio back when the word green was, you know, kind of new to the whole architecture scene, pretty much. And was out on my own, slogged through the recession, doing, you know, beating that drum, you know, championing, you know, energy efficiency and sustainability and building. And then I partnered up recently with Harry Hepburn.
No relationship to Andre Hepburn?
Nothing.
Catherine, nothing?
No Catherine Hepburn, no Audrey Hepburn.
You don't see Hepburn named very much unless it's the Hepburn girls.
Right, no, but apparently there are Hepburn castles in England that are, you know, part of his family heritage.
Part of the mythology.
But that's where Briburn comes from. You know, Briley and Hepburn mushed together. It took us months to come up with that because, I don't know, naming a company is really hard.
Well, that's an interesting background. So let's talk about a couple things. One, I want to get right to next Tuesday's event, Green Drinks event that is really fascinating. Chris, you were part of kind of the founding of Green Drinks. So I want you, if you could give some background of the organization. And then we'll talk about next Tuesday's event, what's happening for the Green Drinks event happening here at Tide Smart at the Viridescent House. And then we'll talk a little bit about how that ties into as the group that is, it's not sponsored by, but the group that it's kind of focused on and benefit in the nonprofit is E2 Tech. So why don't you talk a little bit about Green Drinks?
Sure. Yeah, so Green Drinks is it's also a nonprofit organization, but it's sort of a nonprofit for nonprofits, if you will. And their goal is to promote awareness of other nonprofits and other sustainable activities through the joyous celebration of drinks and local beers, essentially. We've teamed up with some great brewers, you know, like Sebago and Peak Organic, and there's new vendors on board, and they donate their time and their beverages also to promote themselves, but also to promote a nonprofit or a group. So on the second Tuesday of any month, and Green Drinks is actually, I should say, like a national or international even event,
right,
where there's probably a Green Drinks New York, and Green Drinks Paris even, where they're doing things to promote sustainability. Here, for, you know, this upcoming month, it's going to be at Tide Smart Global, and the featured nonprofit is the E2 Tech Council. And we're also going to be touring, as you say, the Viridescent House. So people are going to come for a few hours. They're going to be able to commute over from Portland on the Brew Bus. They're going to be running shuttles. They're going to be hanging out in the Logistics Center here at Tide Smart, networking, socializing. You'll also be able to get on the Brew Bus that runs from Portland to Falmouth, because this is one of the first events that's off-peninsula. So people will be able to commute here and experience Green Drinks and go tour the Viridescent House and learn about the E2 Tech Council and what they do.
Great. Jeff, why don't you talk a little bit? What will people learn about E2 Tech Council, and talk a little bit about the organization for the people that may not be able to come to the Green Drinks event next Tuesday?
Sure. I'm hoping that most of the people that come to this see E2 Tech as a resource. We represent the clean tech sector in Maine, and it's really one of the fastest growing technology sectors in the state.
Give a couple examples. When people talk in terms of green tech, some people may not be familiar with either the various energy forms or companies. So what are some, for context, who is part of that universe of green tech here in Maine?
Sure. Clean tech is pretty broadly defined as renewable energy, energy efficiency services, environmental permitting firms. So we have companies, manufacturers, we have renewable energy companies, we have traditional utilities like Central Maine Power, we have law firms that have energy and environmental practices. We have university officials as well as faculty and students. So we are particularly excited about this because we've been trying to find a way to put the professional crowd that's been working in clean tech in Maine for quite a few years and introduce them to young startups, entrepreneurs, and professionals in the field. So if we can take these two groups and create collisions within the Tide Smart campus so that people can meet and possibly find jobs, it'll be a night well worth spending.
So as far as the organization being a nonprofit, how is it typically funded, and how is it organized, and how is it connected to the state itself in any way, or is it totally autonomous as a nonprofit?
We are a pretty lean organization, and we have very low membership fees. In fact, for students, we charge about $20 a year for a student to belong, and they can come to the forums for free and start meeting with the business leaders that will hopefully give them or provide them jobs in the future. We do get sponsorships from different organizations and many of our member companies for the events that we put on. And we also receive grant funding through the Maine Technology Institute to work on various business and economic development projects that help to support and build the energy, environmental, and clean tech sector in the state. So those are our primary funding sources. And we have a very close relationship with MTI, and they really are one of the strongest technology sectors that organization works with.
By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM. When people think of Maine, technology and advanced technology, really probably doesn't come to the top of the thought process in terms of our economy. And you mentioned TI and Texas Instruments, and so there is some technology here, but obviously relative to California, relative to Massachusetts, where there's just entire zones of technology from IT to medical to biotech. Talk a little bit about the technology universe here in Maine, and what's the state of the state, and what's your thought for future development?
Sure, and we're certainly not a state like Massachusetts that has an MIT that really churns out technology companies and contributes that much to the economy. But we do have one of the best things that we have going for us here in Maine is our natural resources. We have very strong wind resources. The state is 95% forested, so we have a great opportunity in the biomass field. It's really connecting those natural resources with the companies that can take advantage of that to build into their technology companies. And we do have very strong companies that are leading the way in some of these areas. In the wood pellet fuel area, we have several companies that are manufacturing pellets. We have some good companies that are building or actually distributing the boilers that burn those pellets. And we have a pretty strong research facility in the University of Maine through their Forest Bioproducts Research Institute, their Advanced Composites facility that works a lot on wind projects. So I think even though we're not really strong in the technology area, we have the natural resources, we have the quality of life to pull people in from other states and really look at Maine as a great place to set up their technology businesses.
Interesting. Is Jeff Marks. And why don't we talk to you, Chris, a little bit about green building and green architecture. From your website, Bryburn, your architectural firm, is committed to creating innovative, energy-efficient green solutions for residential, commercial, institution, civic projects, artfully reflect clients' needs and interests. I should probably disclose that you and I work together and that I hired you and your firm to design and manage the building of our new Verdescent house here on the campus, which is turning out great. I personally think you guys do great work. It's been a pleasure. It's a pleasure working with you. And talk a little bit about other types of projects and what you think the environment here in Maine is for green building.
Yeah. By the way, thanks for hiring us for that project.
It's not quite finished. So if roof falls off next week, there'll be a whole different discussion. But right now, things are going along really well.
All right. Knock on wood. I think Maine, similar to what Jeff was talking about, Maine sort of has developed this cachet for green architecture. We're rather well known for being this little incubator for passive houses here in Maine, we're leaders in that regard. And I think it's because we've had a really strong architectural community that's been beating that drum for quite a while. So. Verdescent House is a great example of, what is being done here and what we're striving to do. And that's a house, as you know, but I'm going to tell you stuff that you already know. But
please tell our 1.2 million listeners.
That's right. I thought it was 2.1.
Well,
it's growing.
During, we're on Saturdays. This week we're on 11 to 12. So we call that the Home Depot Lowe's commuter audience.
Gotcha.
Like you've heard morning drive, afternoon drive. These are people who are out right this second on their way, probably out buying LED lighting,
the honeydew commute.
Yeah, it's a honeydew. Nice. So that's why it fluctuates. Some people, they pull in and they turn off the radio, but there's just this nanosecond, about 200 people tuned in. So talk a little bit about the Verdescent House in terms of what the elements that both make it passive, make it net positive, and what makes it unique for Maine.
Sure. Well, the first takeaway that lay people really are going to latch onto is, imagine having a house where you don't have any more energy bills, no more buying oil, no more filling it up, no more utility bills. It is not only net zero, but as net positive. We figured out, how much solar it would take to make it net zero, and then we doubled it. And that's, credit to you as well. But so in that case, you've got a house where you're not only not paying for utilities, but you could, in fact, run a fleet of 5 Nissan Leafs if they drive like I do for a year. And then you say, oh, that must cost a fortune. But it's not a fortune. There's nothing crazy going on over there. I mean, building is more expensive than buying. It always has been. But that house is still being built for under $200 a square foot, which, custom homes are being built for that, all the time. And as you know, it looks nice as well as being super energy efficient.
And talk a little bit, literally from the foundation up, what makes that house. And again, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O. Next Tuesday, we're giving tours of the Verdescent House through the Green Drinks event. But talk a little bit, literally from the foundation, what is unique, all the way through the structure and insulation, and then on the roof and the solar and the windows and all that?
Sure. Well, first it's oriented and shaped to take advantage of the sun, the solar heat. And second, and of course that means dealing with windows that are very sophisticated and in, as you know, they come from Europe. They're European tilt turns.
Lithuania, to be specific.
Exactly.
Every chance I get, I love to tell people that our windows have come from Lithuania. It's just, Lithuania is a funny-sounding country, isn't it?
It's hilarious.
Like it's a Lithuania.
It's the T and the H and that, yeah.
You know, and somewhere along the line, I want to put this back onto Jeff Marks, who's with us. He's the Executive Director of Environmental Energy Technology Council of Maine, on why the Environmental and Energy Technology Council of Maine can't recognize that we had to get our windows from Lithuania, and maybe they should try to get a window manufacturing place here so we don't have to go to Lithuania. But we'll cover that next.
Yeah.
But start with the ground up and talk about Veridescen House.
Yes. So this house, it's all about the exterior envelope, you know. So we start with a slab instead of a basement, which I'm doing increasingly less of these days. You know, it's a frost-protected slab. So it's a thick concrete slab that sits on a very thick pad of insulation. And basically what you're doing is not paying for the basement foundation walls or frost walls and putting all that money towards the insulation, which helps protect it from frost. Then we have a very robust exterior wall system. To get even more technical, it's a vapor open assembly, which means we're not only insulating, but we're managing the moisture migration of water within the envelope. So it's a very durable system. And that's another key component to being a green building, is it's going to last a really long time.
And there's how many tons of insulation and the thickness?
If you were to guess it's cellulose, fluffy, recycled newsprint is what the insulation is made of. And, you know, it's an 1,800 square foot house. How many pounds of cellulose do you think we put in? Go ahead, guess. Go ahead.
Well, you sent me an invoice for this a couple weeks ago, so I am paying.
He already knows.
I've already guessed when I wrote out the check. But I didn't know it was recycled newspaper, because as a newspaper columnist, there is a chance that one of my past columns, which people use it for kitty litter sometimes, but it's good to know that possibly some of my writing has ended up. Talk about the circle of sustainable life.
Well, that's why it was so expensive. We had to cull through all the newspaper to find all of your
exactly, because people would clip them out and hold them as special keepsakes.
Right. 13,000 pounds, by the way, to answer that question. 13,000 pounds of insulation. And that's a staggering amount. That's a lot.
Yeah. So the foundation is super thick, so there's the frost line. Everybody knows the ground gets cold. The idea is to separate the ground temperature from the structure. The walls are super thick.
That's right.
And then let's talk about the Lithuanian windows and the super roof.
Right. So the windows, what makes them so special is they're a little different. They're tilt turns, but they seal really well. They're double gasketed, which is a little different than your classic double hung or casement that's American style. But also the glass is triple pane, so it's very insulated. But it also is a lot more specular. It's a lot more clear. So in our climate, it's going to allow more heat energy from the sun in. Like your classic low E window, that Florida wants that. They want to block out. They want a low solar heat gain coefficient, whereas we want a high solar heat gain coefficient. And then we want to put some shading devices on the outside to block that summer sun but let in the winter sun. So we can take advantage of that heat. You also got to be careful, because you may fade furniture, but now these days. You used to not have to worry about that at all, but now.
But you've offered a guarantee replacing our furniture, so that's fantastic.
I don't remember that being in the proposal. I'll have to look through.
Those windows must help with sound as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole house, actually. I mean, all that insulation and that glass, that's. It's a very quiet.
And I've been telling people it's a rectangular shaped structure.
Yes.
And it's oriented east-west to take advantage of the southern sun.
That's
and a lot
correct.
Of people think, you know, you learn kind of in general terms, the sun sets, rises in the east, sets in the west. But where we are in Maine, it kind of loops in front of the south. And I've been telling people it's oriented within a hundredth of an inch to maximize the exact southern facing.
Exactly. A thousandth.
A thousandth.
Yeah. We had a team out there. No,
fantastic.
Yeah. But it is important to get that right.
How it's oriented, if it's an off a foot or something, you just get less sun exposure and it's less efficient.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a little bit overhyped. It's like you can be off by 15 degrees and lose about 5%. But if you go off of that, then it really
impacts the numbers.
Exactly. But it's more important really to control where your windows are. Like if you go to the north side of that building, there's two small windows, and that's it.
Right.
So it's a lot about organizing your space so that the utility spaces are back there.
And the roof is super tight because obviously with heat rising, that's where many structures lose their heat.
It's not just the roof.
There's no attic.
There's no attic. In fact, there's no extra space. There's no annular cavities that are going to get filled or that are just losing volume.
Okay, this is where the woman has to come in. Yes. Where do we store our stuff? If we have no basement and no attic.
We do have closets. And yeah, stuff is...
Do you have enough of them?
Well, yeah, sure. For this podcast, I'm going to say yes. Absolutely.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Were you planning on moving in, Jeff?
No, but if I want to build one like this, I mean, I'm going to need some storage.
You collect...
I have kids and grandkids.
Why don't you be honest, Deb? You in the past have disclosed you're a hoarder. One of those people that collect things. So let's
that.
Not. That's a separate show. But it's a good question in terms of.
No, it is.
You know, there's a plus and a minus to everything. And if you have a slab and no attic cavity, everything that you do in this vessel as a house or a building, you have to contain inside it.
Absolutely true. And that goes for your utilities as well. I mean, like, we shrink those utilities. They pretty much don't exist for this house. I mean, we have two ductless mini-split heat pumps and an ERV and, hot water tank, and that's it. So there's no boiler. We threw that out. We don't need that.
Don't need a boiler. There's no propane. There's no big oil tank, fossil fuels. Nothing like that is going on.
Right. But to answer your question, if we had a garage, this house doesn't have a garage. But if it did have a garage... then we'd put a lot of storage over that, and affecting the interior heat envelope.
I just got to make sure I have room for my stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the stuff you're hoarding, all that stuff.
We do have lots of stuff, Americans.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Not me. I liked.
No.
No. I saw a documentary once, and there was some Indian tribe somewhere, and. Their belief system was you should only have 25 possessions.
Wow.
And from the moment you realize what moments are to the continuum of life, you get 25. But with the 25, the point is, if you want to get something new, if an iPod comes out and you're like, man, I really want to get the iPod, you got to give up a shoe or something.
Right.
Or then if you want a big screen TV in the Indian tribe, you can have a big screen TV, but there goes the toothbrush.
Yeah, I read in New York, or there's like a couple in New York living this ultra small place, living this clean life, and their kid was allowed to have one toy. So
That would fit in with the Indian tribe, because if you have 25 of everything, 1 to 25 is the right toy ratio. Right.
So that toy is like an iPad on steroids.
It's
or something.
Special.
It's
yeah.
like the most.
I'd go with a transformer. I'd go, if you're going to have one toy, I want that thing. My toy has
anything.
A TV. My toy plays music. My toy is also a computer. I'd figure that out.
See, but would that just mean that you'd be buying way more toys and just cycling through? I don't know.
Oh, that's crazy. One point I want to, before we move on, a couple other things. Talk a little bit about, relative to energy and efficiency, what is insulation and efficiency? And my understanding is the more you can contain air itself,
yes,
and stop outside air coming in, inside air going out, that it's once you have an air envelope and you heat it or cool it to 70 degrees and you isolate it from outside temperature sources, it's relatively easy to maintain that temperature because air doesn't want to naturally go up or down. And so if you have enough insulation around it, and kind of the theory of a down jacket, which down feathers have unique properties that immobilize air from going in and out.
Yeah.
But it's more than just when people walk by their windows and there's a draft. It's completely having a barrier. And how does that work in terms of, I don't know, the physics of containing air, and why is that so important in these types of buildings?
Yeah. It's the average house loses probably about 25% of its energy just through air leakage through the envelope. That's even, I'm talking about your doors are closed, your windows are closed, you're not running any fans, you're leaking. And it's pure physics. You know, heat wants to move, from high pressure to low pressure, from heat to cold. And so your house is always under pressure. There's wind, pushing it on the outside. It sucks, literally, it'll suck the heat right out. So like this house, for example, this passive house, one of the standards is to have 0.6 ACH50. I know that's a bunch of jargon, but what that means is you have, 0.6 air changes per hour at 50 pascals of pressure, which is like a 20 mile per hour wind, which means very, very little. I mean, minute amounts of air that gets through that envelope. And when it's tight like that, you don't lose this current of heat that just rides on the air through the envelope. So
we don't need a house to breathe? Or does it still breathe?
No. People need to breathe. We hear builders say that all the time. Houses need to breathe. And we're tired of hearing that. People need to breathe. Houses need to dry. And that's the trick. But since you brought it up, with a house like this and it's sealed up tight like this, it also means you have to provide fresh air ventilation and do that in a very efficient way. And so we have, and you'll love this, Steve, this, we have an energy recovery ventilator from the Czech Republic. It's an Air Pahoda unit.
It came from the Czech Republic.
An international house.
And we've got the Lithuanian windows. We've got to get to Jeff in a second because the Maine Energy Council.
I'm setting him up.
Oh,
it's a segue.
My God.
We need to do this stuff here in Maine. There's no reason why we cannot create an ERV such as that here in Maine. There's no reason why we can't create. We have got, sealant tapes and weather barriers from Switzerland, this could all happen here. But, that siding, that's poplar from, I think New Hampshire. I mean, it's cooked in New Hampshire. But it, came from, locally. So,
it drove through Maine at some point.
Oh, yeah.
It must have been on the highway.
It's pretty
somewhere.
Local stuff. So it's like there's Maine, I'm okay. We're going to Jeff, right? So I'll set him up. Maine is beautiful. It's got, cellulose. It's the Saudi Arabia of cellulose. It's sunny. We have tides. We have wind. We could just go totally off grid and just rock this place. We could and be innovators and do great things. Jeff?
Let me toss it over to Jeff. But that was Chris Briley, who's a co-founder and principal architect of Briburn, talking about building. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB. Now we want to talk with Jeff, who's the executive director of the Environmental and Energy Technology Council of Maine. Talk a little bit about... I think Maine is known as one of the least energy efficient states in the country because as one of the first settlements, we spread out all over the place. So distance is naturally inefficient. We became very dependent on oil. We have much of our residential and commercial housing is really old where it has outdated technology. So there's all kinds of reasons why we're one of the least energy efficient states in the country. But talk a little bit about, from now to going forward, what will it take to realize the vision that Chris just talked about? Is it something where it is dependent on commercial investment? Is it personal behavior, getting electric vehicles? Is it something where our state legislature needs to be much more active? Is it all the above? And talk about how Maine can kind of move forward from your experience with the Energy Council and your experience in many areas of environmental and sustainable technology.
Sure, and it's a combination of everything that you just said. There's no reason that we shouldn't be able to manufacture a lot of these components for these houses and buildings here in Maine. I don't know about windows from Lithuania, but going back to the example about wood pellet boilers, Chris mentioned we're the Saudi Arabia of cellulose, of wood. We have that resource here. We're currently importing boilers from Denmark and from Norway and from other parts of the world. Yet the northeastern market in Maine, because we are 65% dependent on oil for our heating needs and businesses and residences, and we have this natural resource here, why aren't we manufacturing these boilers, these systems, and putting them in the houses here? There's really no reason we shouldn't be. We have one company, Interphase Energy, they're currently importing these boilers from Denmark, but it's a very forward-looking company. They're looking at a diversity of energy resources that they can bring to Maine, and their hope and our hope is that eventually, because the Northeast is such a strong market, we'll be able to bring manufacturing or assembly here at some point.
Yeah, I mean, even wood pellets, I want to talk a lot of answers, but a colleague of mine in Yarmouth recently, in the last couple of years, installed a wood pellet furnace. And for listeners that may not be familiar with the technology, I'm sure like anything else, you can go on Google and find out everything. But it's kind of amazing because there are wood pellet suppliers, much like oil suppliers, that come in. You can install a tube outside your house or building. It goes into a reservoir bin, and then there's a little auger system that puts these wood pellets into a really high-efficiency burn chamber. So it's not like regular wood or logs. It's like super efficient. And I think it's a pretty slick system. And you think that there's greater opportunity for either development or manufacturing here, Maine?
Yeah, I mean, with the wood pellets, with the boilers, with our tremendous offshore wind resources, again, we can be manufacturing the components of the wind turbines here, but we're currently importing those from other parts of the world. So it's not just biomass, it's wind. We can have a very strong solar.
So have we not done all these things in Maine because our economy is just thriving too much and we have too much economic activity and we're just not able to get to these things? And I'm being a little facetious. But why, if America and around the world, people are moving in the direction of more sustainable renewable energy, if people are aware that we're flying on a rock hurling through space at 32,812 miles per hour, with a limited fuel source relative to fossil fuels. That's kind of our gas tank. And whether you believe in climate change or not, Deb, the fossil fuel tank is finite. There's no more dinosaurs. And so the oil reserve, the gas, whether it runs out in 30 years, 40 years, or 100 years, it's going to run out, or it's going to be depleted to the point where it's just inefficient to get. We've got to figure out that the part that always amazes me is, and this appears to be really a kind of core focus of your work, bringing attention to environmental energy technology, why aren't more people concerned? We know the Earth has been around for, 6 billion years, or even if, somebody doesn't believe in kind of the whole isotope.
I don't know who that would be.
Deb. Again, we're going to shut your mic off, Deb. But whether you think it's 6,000, 6 million, whatever, we're going to run out of fuel in a little bit. So to me, this is this is so urgent. We got to figure out the climate change because we're messing up the atmosphere. But we have to figure out energy because literally our lives depend on it. And most people look at it as if it's just some different technology, like it's a cassette 8-track, it's moving to CDs. But human existence, life existence on this rock depends on energy to live, to survive, for agriculture. And nobody, except for people working in the industry, have this sense of urgency. What do we need to do to get that urgency?
It's political will. It's education. I've had people tell me over the last week, because we've had 4 snowstorms here, oh, climate change doesn't exist. Look at all this snow. It's just a matter of making the right connections.
We're looking at Deb because Deb has, she confuses weather and climate, and we try to go through this almost every show, and Deb is one of those people. I am a climate change denier. Deb is just kind of like she thinks it's all good, and I try to explain to her about ocean acidity, temperature, the Arctic Circle, polar bears, all that stuff. nothing.
And I can't get into the details, but I'm going to go with the 96% of scientists that are working on climate change to tell me that this is happening and humans are helping to cause it. It's not the only cause. But
we had a UMaine guy, the head of the climate department. They've got like 72 like really smart scientists at UMaine, cross-discipline, from geologists, from marine to atmosphere. And they're guys and gals, and they're really smart. None of them are really political. They all have little pocket pals. They're nerdy as hell. And, like, they all, you know, believe in the science.
Mm-hmm. It's not so much believing, Steve. It's understanding.
But it shouldn't be belief. We don't need people to believe in gravity.
Right.
Either you accept it or you don't, Deb. And so, but here in Maine, we talked about the legislative thing. And there's obviously big issues in the legislative universe. And, you know, too bad somebody hasn't tried to run for office and try to fix that.
Not too bad.
He was turned back by the electorate. And it's, you know.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I'm not talking about me, of course. I'm talking about in the abstract. But here in Maine, we have a weak economic engine. We have a huge infrastructure with over 35,812 square miles. We have all these challenges. And we should face energy as something that is not just kind of opinion-based, belief-based, but it has to be, it's the platform for everything. How we get around, how we bring goods and services to market, and how we survive and how we grow things. And other than you and your group and some academic groups and some people that are thoughtful about this, the majority of people just kind of like, well, I'm moving from oil to maybe propane or natural gas is coming and, you know, the fracking isn't done here, so that's not a big issue, but they're all fossil fuels. We need to do something. Let's do it right here today. We've got Jeff Marks. He's the Executive Director of Environmental Energy Technology. E2Tech.org is his organization. What can we do? We've got to make a difference.
Well, I think it comes back to jobs and economic activity. And I mentioned before that the clean tech sector is the fastest growing technology sector in Maine. It's not growing fast enough, but it's about 12,000 jobs annually. It's about $1.4 billion annually. And if you look at oil, we don't have oil in Maine. We don't have natural gas in Maine. They're still important parts of the portfolio, but we're exporting billions of dollars outside of the state just for these particular resources. If we can really tap into the natural resources that we have here and bring people who are looking for a better quality of life into the state and go through workforce issues, because we do have a good workforce, educate the people, I think we can be a powerhouse in the clean energy field.
Well, I mean, one quick example here at the Tide Smart campus, 3 years ago we installed an electric vehicle charging station, which I was really happy because it's tied into our system. We have solar power here, and the excess power goes into the CMP grid. But we were the second electric vehicle charging station in the whole state. And we have this huge state. And you travel to California, and, you know, the week that we installed our electric vehicle charging station, I was in Santa Monica for an event, and I went to a parking lot, and there was like an arrow EV charging this way, regular cars this way. And I looked around the corner, and there were like 50 charging stations at one little beach. And obviously in California, there is a huge universe of cars, lots of people, so it's a different scale. But a lot of these things are kind of like which comes first, chicken or the egg. If you don't have the infrastructure, people are like, oh, I don't want to get an electric vehicle. I can't charge it when I'm working. And if you don't have the vehicles, people don't invest in the infrastructure. Something disruptive, I think, has to happen. And in most cases, government policy has to take a lead. Talk a little bit, Jeff, about what type of interface you have relative to policy setting in Augusta. Is there any legislation pending, or is it more of a long kind of game where you just have to create awareness with local government and state government?
Well, it's funny. I was a lobbyist for years in Washington, D.C. for a major company as well as a trade association representing companies. On my first day at E2Tech, the question before the board was, will E2Tech become an advocacy organization? And they looked to the ex-lobbyist in the room, and I said, no, I don't think we need to. I think we have several groups who are lobbying on different issues. What we can be is look at our membership, look at the diversity of companies, look at the jobs that they're providing in different geographical locations within the state. We can be an education source. We can be a credible third party. We work with clean tech companies, but we also brought a company like Dead River onto our board last year. They've been around Maine for a long time. They have people who are not only selling oil, but they have the technicians who will be installing the renewable energy systems of the future. Why don't we work with them, bring them under the same tent, and work toward this common goal of having a truly diversified energy supply? This year in the legislature, it's the usual bills, bring hydro from Canada, slow down wind development through the state, bring more natural gas capacity into the state. Those have been around for the last few years. Those issues will continue to be part of the energy agenda this year.
Well, we're going to have to do additional shows on this, Jeff, because I think it really is not only about efficiency and economic issues, but ultimately it's a life and death issue, without being overdramatic, for both the planet and for the people on it if we don't figure out and invest now in technology. As we finish up, Chris, we got Chris Briley here, Briburn. Why don't you recap a little bit next Tuesday's event in terms of what time it is and what people will see, and also how it's to benefit E2 Tech.
Sure. So this Tuesday, February 10th, come on down to Tide Smart Global here in Route 1 Falmouth, and you'll get to hang out with probably maybe 300 young professional types who are there to network and to learn about E2 Tech Council, also learn about Tide Smart Global and what you guys do, and also tour an awesome passive house. And have some good times. Is that enough?
I think, Deb, are you coming?
I am.
Okay.
And
because everything is green, don't bring any of your plastic cups. Or any of your styrofoam.
That's exactly right.
You either bring a vessel, as we say in the business, or you can buy a $5
corn cup.
Okay.
Have you ever had beer in a corn cup?
No.
It gives it this nice little corny flavor.
Corny? No.
Something's corny.
I'm kidding. Something's corny, and I don't think it's the cup. Well, really excited to host that event this Tuesday. Hope people come down. They can find information online. If you go to e2tech.org, they can go to Green Drinks, which has a Facebook page. Go to Green Drinks Portland, or just Google Green Drinks Portland. But love to have you both come back, and this is an important discussion, and really appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for the time, and we appreciate everything that you're doing next Tuesday.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We've had Jeff Marks, Executive Director of Environmental Energy Technology. Their website's e2tech.org. You can get information there. And also Chris Briley, who's co-founder and principal architect at Briburn, www.briburn.com. You can get information on there. One of the leading architectural firms and leaders in green building and passive building. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. You will hear us next week. Because of basketball programming, our second hour will not be on this week, but we will be back next week from 11 to 1. Thanks for listening to Tide Smart. We're out.